Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
But this little dink ball, no one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the way it is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. Yeah, I'm not being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, I Cuffrey, you free state bastard. And next thing I hear, you have no fucking jurisdiction up here.
The Pádraic Pearces are champions in Roscommon twice in 3 years now. So they say, Niall, as they say, a good team can win it once. Takes a very good team to win it twice. I'm not sure about three or four.
Yeah, well, I'd say Pádraic Pearces, they're delighted now this morning because like that was their first one ever to win 2 years ago. And to come back and kind of follow it up, it kind of confirms their dominance now. Having been in the final last year as Roscommon's best team, really.
Yeah, so they are the dominant team, there's no doubt about that. They were 2 points ahead on 58 minutes, Lee, and they worked a brilliant hand-passed goal. You know, a real counter-attack goal through the hands, not as beautiful as Cora Finn's, that famous one in the All-Ireland final, but a pretty good one. Like, I mean, I suppose 2 points up on 58 minutes, I might have tapped that over the bar because it was a cagey game, but I suppose they went for the juggler and the game over at that stage then.
Yeah, it was a really good team effort. Niall Daly, I thought they sort of were a bit slow coming out of defence because Niall Daly took the ball and he sort of tucked two men on just before the halfway line, and it was a bit, it could have been a turnover there, but like he was on fire all game. So he burst through them, popped the ball over, and you know what it's like when you're behind and there's a couple of minutes left and you know you need a goal, but the other team have the ball, you become a bit like overcommitted with your tackle. So like they all just sort of drew towards the ball, all the defenders trying to get like a desperate hand in. So it just made it easier for Pearces to pop the ball over the head, over the next head, over the next head. And then suddenly they were clean through on goal and it was a matter of palming the ball home. But it was an excellent team goal and one the manager, I'm sure, would be delighted with.
Yeah, well, the manager was in the stands. So Pat Flanagan was sent off in the semi-final against Bridget's and he spent the time in the sand. He said, the most difficult hour I've ever put in football. I like being with my players. I've been down here for 4 years. I've done hundreds of sessions, but the players took ownership out there. Here we go again. We're talking about Nace taking control of it. Are managers overrated?
Well, I've seen a few photos of Pat Flanagan and he was walking along the stands and he seemed like a lad that was kind of having his voice heard anyway. I think the only effect the suspension had was really having him 10 metres further back than he would usually be, because he seemed fairly restless there and he was shouting at the boys. But no, he seems to be a brilliant manager, Willie. Like, he's won county championships now in Roscommon, Offaly and in Westmeath as well. Like, so he's kind of worked the oracle there and seems to have something. Like, he was talking about getting the best out of this team after the game and saying that they kind of have no ceiling, like, and he just seems to have really got the best out of them there in Roscommon.
Well, they lost to Clonagale in the group stages, Lee, like, I mean, and they kind of regrouped after that. And now they've beaten St. Bridget's in the semi-final and they've beaten Clonagale in the final. So I don't think anybody's can ever claim that Pádraic Pearsons are not the best team in Roscommon at the moment. You know, St Bridget's and Clondegale are traditionally the two big, you know, the two huge teams in Roscommon.
Yeah, to be the best, you have to beat the best, and you know, they couldn't have had a tougher route to getting the trophy, and they did it in the end, and fair play to them. Like, in terms of the manager, I mean, I think, in fairness to the manager, the main part of their job is in preparation and what's done in training a fair bit earlier in the season. You know, it's called drills because they drill everything, and then you can start to watch your players when they get to the latter stage, and it's almost like autopilot the way that they can play, and they know what way to make their runs and what way, when to come back and forward, and positionally where everyone should be and need to be. So although he said it was restless, it must have been nice being up in the stands in them last 2 minutes watching that goal through the hands, all beautiful play, and he won't take credit for it, but I'm sure, you know, it looked like a well-coached goal.
It's a weird one because managers, like, I mean, some managers like being up in the stand, full stop. Now, they are radioed to their selectors, but what, he's 10 metres is the rule, I suppose. So he could probably, like, a good shout, like, I mean, I suppose. That's kind of, but managers like to think that their influence on the sideline is bigger than it actually is. You get a message from the manager if you can hear him. A lot of the time you might throw your eyes up to heaven now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you would. Like, I mean, what direction have you ever, unless it's a change of positions, which you obviously do what you're told. But what advice, like, do they really impact a game that much?
Yeah, sometimes you wouldn't even be listening closely enough to throw your eyes up to heaven at what he's, like, at what he's saying. But
yeah,
it reminded me of the video. Did you see that video of Jose Mourinho last week? He was watching the Roma game from behind the dugout and he was jumping up and down. It was Pat Flanagan was sort of like that on the line there yesterday. Like, he was doing that and he could sort of impact on the game.
Yeah, maybe to say that he had the influence on it. When I'm not sure if they do it all. All right, lads, we'll leave it there because we have Pádraic Pearsons full forward Hubert Darcy and joins us on the line now. How's it going, Hubert?
Very good now, Colm. Can't complain too
I'm
much.
Sure, I shouldn't really be asking you how's it going. It's the Monday after winning a county title. Like, I mean, Jesus, it's a very obvious answer.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, there's no other answer that I could give.
How were the celebrations last night?
Great, yeah, great. A little bit more low key than our first one 2 years ago, maybe. That was a bit mad, but this one was kind of sweeter, I suppose, would be the word for it.
Yeah, I saw Niall Daly saying that as well. That it's a little bit sweeter. Why is that?
I think just the journey we were on there for a few years, like we were losing county final after county final, and 2 years ago it was more relief than anything.
Yeah,
and a huge outpouring of just relief and joy, I suppose. And then yesterday it's kind of backing that up. We've been there before and it's really, really sweet, yeah, like I said, just to get back again and back it up, I suppose.
Well, that's the thing, I suppose, a good team wins it once and then, you know, a very good team is able to back it up.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, I mean, you were saying you lost like a good few finals before. You weren't obviously on it for all of them, but I think you lost a couple and then you won it last year. So then you lost the final again against Bridges. If you'd lost this year, you nearly could have been back into kind of losing. There probably was a little bit of pressure even on this year's one.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like it doesn't take much to be labelled kind of nearly men again after if we were to lose two in a row after winning the first one. So, yeah, just great to show that the first one wasn't a fluke, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. And like, I mean, I suppose, like I said, you lost to St Bridges last year in the final and you kind of followed up this year. You lost to Clonagale in the group stages, am I right? And that was a pretty, I think there was only 4 points in it, but it was a pretty convincing win for Clonagale. It was Niall Daly saying that you took a good hard look at yourselves or something after that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we started the year in the championship very poorly. Like, that was probably one of our worst performances for a long while now in the group against Clan. But yeah, we have that experience now. Like, it's not the first time that's happened to us where we've had a poor enough game in the group stage. So we had the experience to kind of know how to deal with it. Went back, like Niall said, yeah, had a real good long hard look at ourselves. And we haven't really looked back since, which is great.
No, and like, you did it the hard way. You beat Bridget's and you beat Clonagale, like the two, you know, powerhouses of Roscommon football in the semi-final and the final.
Yeah, and the two clubs lording it over us here, the local rivalry. So, yeah, that's probably another reason why it's very sweet for us, in fairness.
Yeah, the game itself, like, it wasn't a great spectacle. But, like, I mean, a lot of club games are like that at this time of the year when there's bodies going back and with the weather, it's hard to break through.
Yeah, the conditions were not great now yesterday, it has to be said. But, yeah, you're right, it probably wasn't a great game. Pearce and St Clan would tend to serve up those kind of games fairly regularly now. Last year we beat them by a point in the semi-final. It was probably even a worse game than yesterday. So I think we were just lucky. Two goals in the second half, we actually put together some nice moves. And that was the difference really in the end.
Yeah, that was it. And why are the cagey games? Is it just kind of respect for each other or...?
Maybe the opposite, I don't know. I don't really know. I think just the two, like, we'd be seen down the years as a very defensive team, and Clan would be kind of pragmatic as well, I guess.
Right.
So just, you know, we come up against each other, we nearly cancel each other's game plans out a bit, and scores are often very hard to find or come by.
Right.
But yeah, luckily we got more of them yesterday than they did.
You mentioned the two goals. They're huge in cagey games like that. Like we were saying, you were heavily involved in the first one. Your kind of pretty suspect pass into the full forward line was made look very good.
I was nearly blocked down, so I kind of had to get it up and over. Looped. Yeah, it wasn't a great ball now, but Paul made something of it inside and broke to Conor Lohan, and it was a great finish from there. And yeah, just a great time to get the goal. Gave us a bit of breathing space at the start of the half. And then just as Clan were coming back into it, we got the second one as well, which kind of got us over the line.
But that was a great goal. Like, and I presume when you're talking about being more of a, you know, a defensive team and a running team, like that's probably the perfect goal for a running kind of counter-attack team, isn't it? Like that's what you're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Like they had a sweeper back inside. So when that's happening, you have an extra man around the middle. So it's just about trying to break a line there. And from there, you should have an overlap all the way in. And that's exactly what happened. Niall Daly broke the line initially, and it was just quick hand pass. And then with the overlap that got us in one-on-one and two-on-one, really. And nice little picture perfect pass across. And Jeff Tumulty, his only touch of the game, I think he said last night. The goal, it came on 10 minutes to go, and one touch of the ball, and that was it.
Right, so he never kicked the goal in a county final, scored a goal.
No, that's it, yeah. Never kicked a ball, never caught a ball.
Jesus, yeah, he never even caught it, yeah, he just palmed it in. Yeah. Pat Flanagan said after the game, he says, the funny thing is that there's an awful lot more in them, and I feel I expect it from them. We showed a lot of character today. I think I'm hearing this out of Pat Flanagan a lot, that even when you won the county title, I think he was saying something similar, just from memory. Like, is there a feeling that, you know, that you can, there's an extra gear in you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we were all saying last night, we didn't play well yesterday. There's definitely a lot more in us. We left a lot of scores behind us. We left a lot of half chances that we didn't really develop fully. Conditions played a part in that as well. But yeah, we're close to clicking. But yeah, definitely, I don't think we're showing our 100% capabilities yet.
Right. So, like, are you basing that on maybe click? Because you wouldn't see all the Roscommon games, obviously, on television. Are you basing that on clicking in group games and, you know, showing it, you know, or are you basing this on, you know, training and what potential is in the team, you know, or what is this kind of clicking? When have you clicked?
I think we tend to click for like a couple of minutes in a lot of the games. Like yesterday, the first 10 minutes, I think we were very, very good.
Yeah.
Like we were 4-1 up after 10 minutes. We were moving the ball really well. And then we just kind of got bogged down after that. Our run in 19, through Roscommon, we were scoring heavily. We really clicked that year now. I think that's really what we're going off. And in the two Connacht games that we won as well, we put in some really good performances there. So last year, when we lost the final, we were kind of trudging through the year, didn't really get going at all, and were deservedly beaten. And like we said at the start of this year, it was kind of more of the same. And once we had that good long look at ourselves, we're getting much closer to where we need to be. Like our semi-final performance against Bridget's was really, really good. We kicked 18 points, which is a lot for a team like us to be getting. So yeah, I think that's what we mean when we're saying that. Like we're just, especially going forward, getting scores easier than we have been in the past. That's the potential we have in the team, the talent that's in the dressing room. We know that we can produce it on a more consistent basis.
Right. Okay. Then. And what about Pat Flanagan? How did you manage that? So he was in the stand.
He was, yeah. He was thrown out in the semi-final the last day. There was an awful lot of messing going on early on in that game. So, yeah, he was thrown out. And I think that was upheld then that he had to be outside the line yesterday. But he wasn't too far away from the action, I'll tell you.
Ah, right. So he was saying that it's a terribly difficult hour. But so like, he's not allowed on the pitch. So he can be at the railing, you know, and his selector can walk to the side. And, like, probably not that much difference,
yeah.
Is there?
Yeah, no, well, it's a weird one. Like, I don't know, you probably know the Hyde. There's like, there's a good bit of space there with the concrete seats before the stand.
Yeah.
So he was just stood in those, like, 10 metres away from the sideline. So yeah, look, it didn't make too much difference. At the water breaks, we went over to the rail and he was there, like, talking to us. So yeah.
Right. And yeah, he could be in the dressing room then as well.
Yeah, he came into the dressing room, all right, yeah, sure, they're out the back as well. So.
Oh yeah, would
nobody was going to see him.
It would have actually suited G if the dressing room ban was there, because he could have been able to give.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be the first team that actually chose with the dressing rooms open not to go into the dressing room.
Yeah, I'd say if the weather was a bit better, we nearly would have done it.
So where's this team come from in Padraig Pearse's, Hubert? Like, I mean, you know, you've been in the last three finals, you've won two of them. Is there one man kind of marked out in the club that's been bringing these underage teams up together?
I don't think so. Like, if you look at the team that we have now, there's a really good mix of age groups. Like, we have a serious old guard, the likes of Niall Carty and Niall Daly, who've been there for years. We've got kind of lads in their kind of prime years, like the other Dalys and Davy Murray. And then young myself, maybe 24 as well, that kind of age group. We've a couple from my kind of era, underage. Yeah. And then this year as well, we've had a lot of younger lads coming through. The likes of Jack, who got the goal yesterday. He's only just got 18 last week. So yeah, it's kind of a consistent conveyor belt. Like, we wouldn't be super strong underage. We'd win the odd title here and there. But yeah, we've been able to get like two or three lads every couple of years that come through, which is key when you're trying to build a strong senior team.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You don't have to be winning underage once there's two or three good lads coming off the underage.
Yeah, exactly.
Come here, like, I mean, I had to do a bit of looking today to see, did you drop off the Roscommon panel? But like, I mean, there's a few different factors in this, and that is the Roscommon have played two championship games in 2 years. Like, I mean, yeah, they've been two knockout championships and you haven't featured. So like, I was wondering where you were going, but you have been on the panel the last couple of years.
I have, yeah. I kind of broke through in 2019 when we won Connacht that year. I was getting on the team and getting playing.
Yeah.
And then just before the first lockdown there with COVID in the league, I was kind of consistently getting on the team. And then since then, yeah, I just haven't been getting a look in, really. I've had a few injury issues and it's been a frustrating couple of years. And like you said then, yeah, just two one-and-done championship years doesn't really help matters either when you're looking for game time as well. But yeah, look, hopefully I can drive on from here. I know myself, I haven't been in the greatest of form either in the last 2 years, so can't really look too far away from my own self as well, so... Look, hopefully I can keep going from here now. I feel like I'm playing good football at the moment. I've got a bit of confidence back, so hopefully I can drive it on.
You're a weird one in that first impressions is always kind of something that sticks with you. And then the first time I saw you playing is a wing forward for Roscommon. And then I see Padraig Pearse's winning. I'm like, Jesus, they've converted the wing forward into a full forward when it's actually it's completely the other way around. You've always been a full forward and Anthony Cunningham converted you to a wing forward.
Yeah, that's it. Pretty much nail on head there. Yeah, I've been a full inside line the whole way up, minor, underage. And yeah, once Anthony came in, then I was kind of moved out to the wing to do a bit of donkey work. yeah, look, it's good to get both sides of the stick as well. A bit of versatility is no harm as well.
Ah, yeah. It probably makes you work harder when you go back in full forward, in that you can work maybe half as hard as the half forward line and you're still working harder than you did before.
Well, that's it, yeah. And like, I can see from being outside trying to deliver a ball in what I'd want to see out there, and it just kind of, you know, different perspectives. Can bring different things into your game that way as well.
Yeah, and how did you take to that? Like, I mean, did you enjoy all the work that comes with the modern wing forward now? You know, breaking back, doing a lot of tackling, then trying to break back up when the ball's turned over? Because I suppose Roscommon game plan wouldn't be a million miles from Pearse's, would it?
No, yeah, like there is a lot of work that goes into that role. But I think once you're thinking through it, once you can anticipate things, like if you see a kick out gone out the other side of the pitch, you can start hedging your bets and start getting back like a little bit early, and it makes life a lot easier than having to sprint back if you're reacting rather than being ready for it.
Right. Yeah, I see with a lot of teams now, and I was at the Laois semi-finals as well yesterday, and different club matches, and it's the kind of like two men in the full forward line. You have pretty much everybody else defending, and then when you win the ball back, you know, like
it's
a
big smash sprint up the pitch. Yeah.
Well, there's a huge gap, so there's no chance of a kick pass. Everything has to be run, and you're running through a huge pile of players, and it's a wet ball, and it often breaks down. You know, whereas if you had somebody bridging that gap, you could actually kick it up to them, and you could take a little rest.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that we try to do now with Pearce's. And sometimes, you know, best laid plans go out the window.
Yeah. Well, they obviously have to follow their men on some occasions, so they get sucked in.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. A lot like teams are holding on to the ball a lot more now, going over and back to pitch, you know, being patient.
Yeah.
So when that happens, like all your forwards get sucked back because all the backs are going up to help out with that kind of keeping the ball stuff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where those big gaps appear, I suppose. Yeah. And like you said, it can be very hard to link effectively then.
That's it. So, like, I mean, I you know, you're running up. I presume when you win the ball back and the other team has most of their players in your half and you've nearly all
most
30 players
in our own half.
And then you have to work it out through the hands because there's no kick pass on.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. But there's plenty of training drills that get you ready for that.
Yeah, those hand passing drills where there's no kick.
Hand passing drills.
Sometimes when I'm describing this, I'm kind of glad I'm retired, Hubert.
I was born in the wrong era.
Come here, what are the plans for today? Like, I mean, Pádraig Pearse's is made up of three little parishes, am I right in saying that? So what do you do the day after? Do you pay one a visit, or do you go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in one different one parish each?
Last night we were obviously in the clubhouse, so I think that counts as hitting all three in the one. Today, I think we're obviously right outside Banlasloe there. So I think most of the lads are going into town for the day, into Banlasloe there. So that's the plan at the moment anyway. So
right.
We'll see what happens later on.
Sounds like a good plan. Come here, I'm not going to keep you any longer. Yeah. I'll let you on and enjoy the celebrations. Thanks very much, Hubert. And best of luck for the rest of the year.
No bother, Colm. Cheers. Thanks a million.
Great stuff from Hubert there. There was more drama in Offaly. The Offaly County Final probably had more drama in it, but it wasn't on TG Cahir. It ended in a draw. Last kick of the game, Niall McNamee scores a goal. Like, I mean, Roy of the Rovers stuff. Niall McNamee, obviously, I'd say probably up with the very best forwards Offaly have ever produced in the top three, you'd imagine. He scored the goal. So Anton Sullivan... look, you'd have to be very... You would be critical of Tullamore in this. Like, they're a goal up. This is the very last attack of the game. Anton Sullivan has a free. It's brought up. He kicks a diagonal ball. He's obviously looking for Niall McNamee. Niall McNamee is behind his man initially, comes running for it, wins a great ball that just hops in front of him up into his belly. And then he's running into trouble. He has a man behind him. He's running into another man. And instead of the other man putting his hands out and wrapping Niall McNamee, grabbing him and pulling him to the ground or doing anything, he tries the showboating shoulder, and he's only a small little lad, and he hits Niall McNamee such a shoulder that he knocks Niall McNamee back from the direction he was coming into a clear path on his left foot. Niall McNamee buries a goal. I don't know. Like, you know, it's hard to be too critical of him because, like, I mean, there's panic stations at that stage. But sometimes this showboating shoulder is not, it's not what, the harder thing to do is just put your hands out.
Yeah, you don't want to be too critical of him because, like, it's so late in the game, and, like, it was the 64th minute, and it's just, like, you're kind of doing anything you can. And, like, your man that came in for the shoulder, he's probably thinking, like, right, like, I know he came from a long way away, like, he was nearly 15 metres coming in. And he just had such momentum built up. He said, right, I'm going to hit him. But it was definitely kind of miscommunication between the two of them, because the other lad was kind of shadowing McNamee coming with him, and this lad just pushed him back to where there was no one there. Like McNamee did well himself as well, because it wasn't an easy ball the way it hopped kind of in front of him. And so then when he got that shoulder, it sent him on his way. and like with the left foot, like just straight into the bottom corner, like it was some finish in fairness. And the scenes behind the goals, you could see the road fans were jumping up and down, and at the same time there was Tullamore lads, and it was in O'Connor Park and Tullamore, and they just their head in their hands, like, and you'd feel for them, like, because they haven't won, I think, since 2013, like, and when you're 3 points up that late in the game, it's some sickener, isn't it?
You want to wrap it up, and Alan McNamee was sent off in the game, so you, like, Tullamore might look at it as, and this was our big chance, but obviously we don't want to criticise the defender too much, but like, I mean, it's happened to me loads of times where you take a shoulder and you go, oh Jesus lovely, how did that happen? I've just been knocked out of the trouble and now I'm away. It doesn't happen all that often, but even for Niall McNamee, because he did hit it, he took a fairly big hit. And again, even to talk about how silly it was, and going back to it again, Niall McNamee is a big unit. Like, you're probably not going to knock him. And he wasn't that big of a player. But the composure is supposed to take the ball on the hop under pressure, known as the last attack of the game, to take that hit and then go back over onto your left-hand side, Lee, and just shake the hit off and then go, right, I'm right in front of the goal, last kick of the game, and have the composure to bury it into the bottom corner with the inside of his foot.
Yeah, I mean, he was the coolest man on the pitch at that stage of the game. It was an incredible goal because he still had so much to do, really. I mean, the distance, it was a fair bit of distance. The goal, it even took a bobble on the ground just before it went into the net, like, as that's how far out he was in the par that he needed to get for it to make it. But it still had enough to carry right through to the net. Yeah, in terms of the hit, it was probably a bit silly. Like, it's not even just that he hit him and that took Niall into space. It's the fact that the other defender, the one who was on Niall, was goal side of him.
Yeah.
Like I say, he was sort of far out enough that if he just, you know, stay big, stay tight to him, don't let him turn, or at least if you're going to let him turn, you know, don't give him too much space so that, like, he has to go for the point and you can get a hand on. The sweeper or whoever it was that was flying in, he would have been far better just even, you say, wrapping him up, but if he hadn't even just went in behind again and really closed up that channel, you know, it would have took less energy. It would have, I don't know, it's all very well and good saying it, you know, from our point of view, we didn't play 63 minutes or whatever it was of the match at that stage, absolutely exhausted, a little bit desperate, and as Niall says, he had serious momentum behind him, so you start to believe in your own momentum when you take a big sprint. You think, I can knock over anybody here, but he found out he couldn't.
Yeah, he certainly couldn't. And if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about or haven't seen this, it's online. Offaly TV have tweeted out, I've tweeted it out from my Twitter account, and everything we're saying here will start to make sense to you once you see that about 20 second clip. So yeah, we'll look forward to the replay in that one, see Tullamore lose their chance or not. More drama, Lee, I'm going to stay with you. Cole Island, what the hell is going on with these lads? Not only are they after knocking Eden Dark out with 2-1, was it in the 2-1 in injury time? I was trying to think back. 2-1 in injury time to break Eden Dark hearts. They scored 3 goals in the last 8 minutes to beat Errigal Kieran by a point. They were down to 13 men when they scored the 3 goals. Like, this game was over. Like, what is going on with this club?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said it before that it's the Tyrone Championship this year. The hashtag with it is hashtag refuse to lose. And like, that's just the mantra that these teams have been taking, because it was an absolutely insane game. I was trying to live tweet it, but like, I couldn't keep up with it. Like, every time I turned around, I was like, oh, and by the way, there's 2 players sent off. Oh, the goalkeeper's just scored. Like, it all got absolutely out of hand. But initially, the first half, it was all Errigal Kieran. They were very much in control. Cole Island were strange. They were playing this route one football. They were dying to get the ball into Paddy McNeice and fall forward. Errigal Kieran had a sweeper back and they were just sweeping it up. And they must have been delighted all day, you know, like, yeah, just keep sending it in. We'll gobble it up and we'll come at you. And that proved to be the case. And although Errigal Kieran were only a point up at halftime, Cole Island hadn't actually scored from play at that stage. And Derek Yanovan, you know, Cole Island seemed to be a little bit too obsessed with him, in the sense that, like, Paddy Hampshire got a really good block on him at one stage, but Michael McKernan was definitely sent to do a job on him, and they got very friendly with each other, 2 Tyrone teammates, but they got into a bit of a scuffle and whatever, and it led to Michael McKernan's first yellow card. And then in the second half, Peter Hart scores this absolutely wonder point from the sideline, nearly the corner flag. I mean, it was outrageous. And he's a guy who'd be very calm, doesn't really celebrate, but he gave a big, huge fist bump. You know, that's what it meant to him. And then it followed with Michael McKernan throwing the head up. He got another yellow, and then it's a red card. And you have to say at this stage that Cole Island, you know, down to 14 men, it's the 51st minute, they haven't got a shot from target, or they haven't got a shot from play. Out of nowhere, they get this goal. Jason Carberry, he takes it from distance. It takes a slight deflection, goes into the corner, so now they've got a goal. But Rory Canavan, The younger brother, he came on as a sub for Argyll Kieran. He scores these two wonder points in succession, like within a minute of each other. So nearly cancelling out the goal anyway.
Right. How's he a sub for Argyll Kieran?
I don't think he wasn't a sub in the first two games, so he must be nursing an injury or something. And he did have a starting number on his back, right, whatever it was with the warm up or something like that. But Dara Canavan had came off injured at this stage, so maybe the Michael McKernan job did do what they wanted on that. But Rory was on, and he was a real spark. So then, you know, like, he still didn't have too much hope for Killeen, but in the 55th minute, to get a penalty that was scored by Tiernan Quinn. He's another exciting player. He would have started himself when he's nursing an injury as well. Then in quick succession after that, Brian Toner gets a goal. So that's the 57th minute. So now they've got three goals in succession, which actually puts them 1 point ahead. And then the next thing I see is the Argyll Kieran goalkeeper running the field, and he gets the equaliser from play with an outrageous score. And you're just sort of thinking, what's actually happening here, you know? And then Killeen corner forward gets sent off, his second yellow. His name escapes me, number 15. But so they're down to 13 men. The game's in the melting pot. It's a draw. And they get a free kick from a brave distance. And Cormac O'Hagan, who had scored five already in the match, you know, it was his. He managed to seal it over the bar for his sixth point. And like, now they're in the lead, and no one can sort of believe it. Like, the camera of the match was shaking. You know, you're trying to sit and make out what was actually happening. The Argyll Kieran did get one more attack. It fell to Peter Hart. It was a speculative effort. Like, I mean, in fair play to him, it went just way, but it would have been an outrageous score. But that proved to be the last attack of the game. And now Killeen are in the final somehow. I can't really explain it.
Yeah, Jesus, refuse to lose. That's that sums it up. They played Dromore, obviously. That was the game on RT on Saturday night. I saw a tweet from Eamon McGee after the match. How many McNabs live in Dromore? There's four forwards out of the six are McNabs, Avley.
There's a lot of McNabs.
If you're actually listening on the radio, you say, geez, your man McNabs playing great stuff.
That's exactly what
he's
I
on every ball.
I was watching the game and I was like, geez, this lad McNab is unbelievable. He's the fittest man I've ever seen, and sure, I have money after finding out there now just for them.
Yeah, so there's Sean, Ronan Senior, Ronan Junior and Emmett, Lee.
Yeah, this man's everywhere. God, he's in the back lane, he's up front and whatever. But the two Ronans, Ronan McNabb, they're not actually related, but they're called them Junior and Senior. There's only 4 year difference between them.
All right.
But it's the only way that they can differentiate. And then Sean McNabb, I think they call him Magpie because apparently he used to be very fond of his food, so it's maybe a harsher one, but they have a way of differentiating them all. But Emmett McNabb was definitely the star out of all of them, and they each of them played an excellent game. But Emmett McNabb, I think he finished the game with 5 points, but one of them was in the first half, and it was just brilliantly worked. The ball, it fell to Niall Sludden, who, like a basketball touch, it was no sooner in his hands, was it slipped off his shoulder, and Emmett McNabb running down the left flank almost at the sideline, and he clips one over, and it was a brilliant score. And another very entertaining game. Trillick were 7-1 down at the first water break, but then they were 3 points up.
Yeah,
they started the second half very well, and their first wide actually came in the 63rd minute, but they hadn't scored from something like the 40 something like that, you know, so they were maybe very conservative with their shots, didn't take any risks, and they ended up losing by 2 points. So Dromore and Killeen in the final.
That's it. And like, I mean, the game of two halves, the Trillick Dromore one was a game of four quarters. That's kind of how you would sum, in an old school cliche way of summing that one up. Two great semi-finals in Tipperary in the hurling, Niall. Loughmore beat Borrisaleigh, 7 points down, 20 minutes play. Now they had a strong win behind them. John McGrath scores, I think he scored 1-4, the last 1-4 of the game.
Yeah, he scored 1-5, I think, in the last like 15 minutes, 1-5 of their last 1-6. Like, and it was just such a typical Loughmore kind of, they never know when they're beaten. Like,
never, don't they not?
Like, and I'd say, as we were talking about last week, kind of about the football, the whole club spirit, like, it just seems to be, these lads are, they've played so many games together and they just got through another one yesterday. Like, there were 6 or 7 points down, like, very early into the game, like, and Borrisaleigh going well, like, Gerry Kelly, our man, like, scoring from different angles, scoring from a sideline even, like, and, you know, Borrisaleigh were hurling well at that stage, but Loughmore, you always felt, even when they were 6, 7 points down, you always felt that these lads were going to come back into it. And, like, sure, John McGrath, he's been the man of the match in the county football quarterfinal, the hurling quarterfinal, and sure, he's obviously going to be man of the match, having scored 1-12 yesterday. Like, he's just on fire at the moment, like, and when they've him going so well, Noel McGrath, Lee McGrath, like, you know, they're in great form. It's great to see them back in the county final after the heartbreak of last year too.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I mean, I'd be really rooting for them after what happened to them last year. Like the sight of John and Noel kind of crying after losing both bloody finals, both very late losses. Anyway, here's the one I want to ask you about. John McGrath had a penalty in the 58 minutes. 18 points to 113. 2 points in it. This puts three in it, which covers yourself for a goal. Remember the county final last year? They're 2 points up. Killadangan get the 45 goes, or the 65 goes over the bar. The goalie takes it quick. They go down, get a goal. Game over. Like, is John McGrath not thinking of that? He went for the goal. Now, obviously, the game's over at that stage then. He scored it. It goes 118 to 113. But if you were a manager, would you be shouting back in, "Just tap that over"?
Yeah, but John McGrath has scored two penalties in the last game he played. He's been man of the match the whole time. I'd say he's just playing with such confidence. Like, and having scored those two penalties against Killaroan, he's like, right, yeah, I'm going to bury this. Like, and that's exactly what he did. Like, and like, I suppose similar enough to the one, the Padraig Pearce's goal earlier, like, you know, they were 2 points up 58 minute as well, and these boys just going for the juggler. It's sort of a sign of a team that's playing with a bit of confidence, and it's great to see him finish it off, because that was the end of the game there and then.
See, that was the end of the game. I suppose if he does go for the point, there's three in it. There's a lot of nerve still.
Yeah, exactly.
It nearly, when that goal goes in, Lee, at least you know the game is over. Like, it is. There are not going to be too many comebacks at that stage. 58 minutes, five down. I don't know. I think managers will get the message in, tap it over, but the forward who's in confident mood isn't listening.
Yeah, I mean, it's a trait that I've always really admired, you know, being brave and taking them scores, because like the manager, I'm sure, is screaming from the sideline, you know, just to take the easier option. But it's just forwards, the forward mentality, you know, peak forward mentality, having the bravery. That's why you're playing in that position, because you want to be the main man, the star, and when the opportunity comes, you have to grab it.
Yeah, no, well, that's true. And we're with the wind. I suppose a penalty with the wind, he gave it a good whack into the bottom corner. Defending champions out. We've a whole list of defending champions out. We're going to start with Killadangan. Turles Sarsfield, to give you credit, now, you called this last Thursday. I said there's going to be Loughmore Killadangan final. You went, "Oh, no, well, no, Turles Sarsfield will be there or thereabouts." This is kind of like the story of a young and older players at both end of the field. Paddy Creedon, son of Peter Creedon, ex-Leash manager, wouldn't been over, not overly impressive as a Leash manager. His son's bloody good, 5 points from play, and Paddy Maher cleaning up house at fullback.
Yeah, you'd have to start with Paddy Maher, because like, I wasn't counting, but it seemed like he cleared about 30 balls.
Why are you poking it in on top of Paddy Maher?
But you see, he was just everywhere, Willie. He was sweeping across. He started full back, and I think he was either on Paul Flynn or Billy Seymour. They were kind of like, these two boys are on the tip senior panel, and they were kind of interchanging, moving around. But Paddy was there, and there was a good few balls that kind of just came into the full back line. And Paddy Maher has this way, if he doesn't win it straight, most of the time he catches the ball. And if he doesn't catch the ball, the ball seems to break, and he's already running out with it, the ball in his chest. Like, and like, he was marking some brilliant players, but he was horsing them out of the way like they were only juveniles. Like, it's just the strength the man has. And people say, like, I know there'd be some people saying, "Oh, Paddy Maher, like, is he nearly coming to his end in the Tipperary jersey?" But like, if you watched that game yesterday, or on Saturday, like, he was just, it was unbelievable. I haven't seen anything like it from a fullback just completely dominating the game. And in fairness to Killadangan, they have at Alan Flynn centre back, and a lot of it was kind of just like nearly a tennis game between Paddy Maher and Alan Flynn. Like, Alan Flynn has, like, he's obviously on the Tip team, and he's a good player for Tip, but he's been the best club hurler in Tipperary for the last 2 years without a shadow of a doubt. Like, I'd say he was man of the match in three or four of the group games Killadangan played this year, and he was just unbelievable yesterday, or on Saturday as well. Like, and then like Killadangan, they're a brilliant team to sort of work the ball up the field. They're brilliant to take their scores, and their two goals kind of came against the run of play, but Turles were probably the better team, and Paddy Creedon was the main man. Like, he scored points at different times when they really needed him. Like, he's only 19 years of age, and between himself and Dara Stakelam, who made his first start for them, he's only 19 as well. The two boys were brilliant, like, and that was the difference in the end. These young lads just driving it on for Turles Sarsfield.
Right, okay, so keep my eye out for those boys. Billy McCarthy, of course, came on for Turles Sarsfield's three cruciates, so great to see him back. I think we gave him a shout out when he was back from two cruciates, and you were feeling sorry for him. So three cruciates on as a sub. Here's something I want to talk to you about, Niall. Turles Sarsfield's Twitter account, Hurler on the Ditch. I think he's anonymous. You might know him in Tipperary. I don't know, but he's a decent Twitter account. He listens to this show a lot because I interact with him on Twitter. Turles Sarsfield's Durles Óg in 2021. Their county senior finalist obviously won the semi-final. They won the under 19 county championship. Under 17 county championship, Durles Óg won. Under 15 county championship, Durles Óg won. And under 13 county championship, Durles Óg won. And I was like, what the hell is this? Because Turles Arsfield is blue and white and Durles Óg are red and white. So Durles Óg are the juvenile section of Turles Arsfield's, but they're a completely different club with different colours. Like, this blew my mind. I'd never heard of anything of the like. It's such a strange, unique situation. I'm going to do something on this next Thursday to explain it to people. How's this come about? What the hell really is it? You can give us some bit of an idea on how Turles Sarsfield's juvenile club is a different club.
Yeah, like, we wouldn't have played Durles Óg too often when we were youngsters, but you'd always just have kind of had that idea that Durles Óg is just a juvenile section of Turles Sarsfield's with maybe a bit of a fancy name and the red and white jersey. But I was talking to a man this morning and he was just telling me that Durles Óg is like, it's a completely different club. They have different administrators, a different board. And he says there's people in that club like who would be staunch that this is a different club, like, and that this is a different organisation to Turles Sarsfield's. Like, it's just, they call it kind of an academy for the young players in Turles, but like nearly like most players who play for Durles Óg, like if they continue playing hurling, they're going to play for Turles Sarsfield. So it's a strange enough one. And
play in Turles Sarsfield's grounds, obviously.
Yeah, there's, and he was telling me as well that sometimes Turles Sarsfield will be playing. I think there is like a Park na Nóg, it's called, in Turles, and Turles Sarsfield would train there a bit as well. I think the red and white colours comes from, it was set up by like some Christian brothers who were in the school in Turles, Skull Alva it was called, and they're red and white, so that's where the red and white comes from. But yeah, going back to the hurler on the ditch, that's the biggest kept secret in Tipperary. I don't think anyone knows who he is.
No. Okay, well, did he say something controversial, like is Liam Sheedy after him or anything like that? Or is
it... I don't know, I couldn't tell you.
Another one who's gone out. Actually, have you ever heard of anything like this, or is it just me?
No, I was trying to follow everything Niall was saying there really carefully to try and make heads or tail of it. I mean, that's incredible. The fact that it's treated more like an academy, but what if it's of a situation like you're a really good minor player, can you play senior for Durles, or do you know what I mean? Can you mix between the two, or is it like a separate membership issue, or do they just keep the academy until you graduate or off age, like whatever way they want to call it?
See, when they won, I think it was before. They won the minor last year. I think that was like under 17. And that was the first year the grade changed in Tipperary. And it was kind of a bit of a tension, like, will this be Durles Óg now or will it be Turles Sarsfield's?
Well, he has it down under 19 as blue and white Turles Sarsfield's, under 17 red and white Durles Óg.
Yeah, or maybe it was the last year minor, but there was a bit of tension, like which club is this going to be? So they called them Nassar Shelig Durles Ella. So it was like a mix between the two of them. And they wore white jerseys that year with, I think it was a bit of red trim, but it was just like to keep everyone happy. Like, so it's your man who you have on Thursday, he's a bit of explaining to do.
He usually does. The plot thickens here. Right, another county champions out. East Kerry are out. Austin Stacks beat East Kerry. Beat them well, actually. East Kerry got a couple of consolation scores. They're not as strong, obviously, this year. The Spa players, Dara Moynihan and some of those lads, they went up senior. So they lost them. Like, first round hasn't been the divisional team's friends. Six of them went out of the eight games. Only two won. So East Kerry are out, Mid Kerry are out, West Kerry are out, Shannon Rangers are out, St Kieran's are out, and Field Rangers are out. And then I was thinking, like, these area teams, first round is not their friends because, like, I mean, they all play with other clubs. And then they come together after the club championship's over. I'm sure the divisional champions are very, very nervous for the first round. You're throwing a lot of lads together that would have kicked the shit out of each other in the club championship. They train probably only for a couple of weeks and then they're out against a seasoned club team that have been together all year. Do you know what I mean? When you think about it, there's a bit of me thinking when you see an East Kerry winning two in a row and they've all these great players, geez, that's hardly fair. And then you look at it on the flip side of it, Niall, and you can kind of see why they don't probably win it every year.
Yeah, you kind of realise that club championship, it's not played on paper. Like, and like, sure, it can only be tough for a team like that. Like, you know, there's lads, they've played for their clubs in that club championship. And, you know, they're used to that. And then they're coming in together and it's just, it's a different sort of a dynamic. And especially in the case of East Kerry, like when you get a draw like Austin Stacks, who are just coming off winning the club championship and coming in great form, like they all know each other's games and so on. Like, sure, it's obviously going to be difficult for a club like East Kerry just to come in and sort of, you know, stick it to them and get themselves going.
Yeah, so David Clifford got sent off and didn't score from play, two frees. So
his marker scored from play, I think it was a Dylan Casey lad. He some day for him, like, to keep
fairy tale stuff,
isn't it?
Yeah, outscore David Clifford, a defender. That's good going. Kieran Donaghy broke the Austin Stacks record. Austin Stacks are a very defensive team, and they went 1-7 to 4 points up against East Kerry, and they dropped all their players back behind the ball, and Donaghy and Everett. Like, it's strange for Austin Stacks, such a prestigious, famous Kerry team, to be playing a very defensive system for starters. Now, they've no real star players. Donaghy obviously is their star, but he's 38 now. He broke the appearance record on 60. You know, but dropped all their players back. And instead of going 1-7 to 4, Clifford sent off, let's beat them 2-14 to 4. The game finishes up 1-7 to 1-5, Lee.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that they could even do that and that they had a system in place, and that was obviously prepared and drilled in the training ground and things, that goes back to that disadvantage that East Kerry had that you were talking about, you know, that they were sort of thrown together with very little time to prepare. And, they didn't get, like, a lot of time to work on, like, what way they want to play football and plan A, plan B, plan C, etc. So that definitely is an advantage for Austin Stacks. And in terms of Kieran Donaghy, yeah, I did read, I think it was the Examiner, that was saying that he played a key part in that sweeping role. They know they had him right back, and I suppose he's a big unit of a man. He's got safe hands. He'll definitely do a job there. And 60 was the record, yeah, for the club. 60 championship appearances, so yeah, that's the record for Austin Stacks. When I put a social post up to say that for on GAA Joe on Twitter, I think, and had loads of people commenting under it, you know, being like, oh, this fella did 100 for such and such and 100 here and there or whatever. But I think it's like, but you got to understand, you know, the level that Austin Stacks play at, you know, in Kerry football, you know, to be 38 and be making that many appearances for it, it's the longevity of it nearly that's nearly more impressive, because it's such a high level of football. So yeah, fair play to him.
It's just an Austin Stacks record though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's just for the club.
Yeah, it's just for his club championship appearance record. Coolar out in Dublin. Other county champions out. About six different county champions out. Coolar out in Dublin in the hurling. Kilmacud Crokes beat them. Not the type of Jewel club that we're kind of banging on about. I don't think there's any players playing Jewel. They're in the hurling final. They're in the football semi-final against Ballyboden. That's going to be a great semi-final. I was looking through the hurling team. I didn't recognise any footballers playing for them. Rory O'Carroll and his brother used to kind of play Jewel, but like, I mean, I suppose when they're playing numbers, we don't need to double up.
Yeah, sure. I think they aren't they officially the biggest club in Ireland in terms of club membership. Like, so you're never going to, if you're starting on both teams, it's like you're never going to be able to do that really. Like, and Kilmacud Crokes, like I'd say, they were delighted to get that kind of hoodoo out of their heads, because they've lost to Coolah in two county finals, they drew with them in another, and they're just, I'd say Coolah were kind of the bogey team for them. Like, but
dead men walking though, Coolah, weren't they, all year? When you look back, it's almost like the Dublin footballers. You think, they'll spark. You know, they're getting over games. But when the big semi-final comes, and then they end up getting beaten, and then the hindsight analysis goes, they were there for the taking all year. You know, when you're not really thinking it, you're not thinking it going through the games.
Yeah, you're kind of thinking, oh, geez, they're just doing enough, and they're steadily getting there, like, all the time. But Kilmacud Crokes are, like, they're a very good team, and they've got some brilliant players, like, you know, and these lads really, they've a few young lads, like there was a Dara Purcell who was brilliant on that Dublin under 20 team who got to the All-Ireland final when they were beaten by Cork, but they've so many other lads as well. The likes of Fergal Whiteley was very good yesterday, plays for Dublin, Oisin O'Rourke, and Ronan Hayes and Alex Constein, like, we called them the Twin Towers there last week, and they just, Coolah just weren't really able to manage them, like, the whole way through the game. And Hayes, when he got his penalty, he just stood up and gave a great sort of a celebration. But the boys were kind of, they seemed to be very up for it, and they'd been going well the whole year. And I suppose, like, this is hindsight, but you could have seen it coming.
Yeah. Well, who do you could have seen it coming? Like, I'll have to ask you about this. This is the weirdest one, because then I was watching a match and Conor Callaghan's wearing 26. I didn't see the start of it. And, like, I'm saying, geez, why is he wearing 26? And then you were telling me he started wearing number 4. I was like, what the hell is he doing wearing number 4? There was two number 4s. So obviously he plays full forward. You have your cornerback wearing number four. They obviously lost their number 14 jersey. So as a little remedy to this, to put him wearing number four, the referee cops there's two number fours, makes him go over and change into number 26.
Yeah, it was poor enough logic from whoever gave him the number four jersey there. Just go on, try number four.
Yeah, we get away with this. I wonder, did they draw a one in front of it or something? This is, you have to remember, this is Kula. What sponsorship deal did they get?
Hawaii,
I can't never pronounce that. Hawaii, the mobile phone company, 100 grand or something. And they're sending Con O'Callaghan out in a number four jersey.
There's hope for all of us, isn't it? He came back off the sideline. He was only after changing the jersey and he stripped off, took on 26 then. I'd say within 10 seconds he was collecting the ball and sticking it straight over the bar like it was gas. But the Kilmacud lads kind of seemed to be just standing off Con O'Callaghan. They were kind of just so worried about him that whenever he got the ball, they nearly just said, right, you can take your point. Like, and he was getting points that just came to him so easy. Like, you know, you think they'd nearly push up on him a small bit more, but I suppose it's the fear factor when you're playing a lad like him.
Yeah, it definitely is. They're playing Athena, who are in the first ever final in Dublin, so there's a novel kind of pairing there. Mike Cullen are out in Galway, another county champion, knocked out Mount Bellew. My Lock beat them. Probably not a huge surprise there. It's just a little bit kind of surprising. They won it last year, Lee. They had no Peter Cook. They have Peter Cook back this year. Peter Cook's flying it and they can't win. You know, they can't win it. I'd say Peter Cook is like, Jesus, I take 1 year off. New Galway coach Keane O'Neill was in the stand with Pádraic Joyce watching this one.
Yeah, poor Peter Cook. Like, I mean, because he obviously only adds to the team. It's not like he's an anchor or anything. You know what I mean? He's only going to be a plus in that sense. So he must really be kicking themselves. But it's happening a lot this year in terms of the defending champions. We've talked about it before. There just seems to be there's a hangover, you know, from the season before when you win it. Like, it takes something special to go back to back, and this proves it. But Keane O'Neill and Pádraic Joyce there, yeah, trying to get a head start for the county season, seeing if there's any new blood or any missing remedies that they can pick up on. I wonder if that like spurs on the players a little bit, just knowing that they're there, maybe thinking, you know, that like nifty cornerback who's thinking, I never get a chance at the county, this will be my chance to like really show them and to be a bit braver going forward and stuff. But fair play to them in the end. Like, it'll be... I just, my heart breaks for Peter a little, but it'll be fine.
I remember when Mick O'Dwyer took over Laois, we got like the excitement when a new manager takes over, right? And obviously you want to impress them, and then they go to the club matches and you're playing in the club and you're not just trying to win. You're obviously, it's in your head that there are new county managers here now as well. I remember when Mikko took over Laois, we won the county final. I got 1-2 in the final and Mikko loved me at the start. It took about 6 months for him to change his mind. But I felt like I had a huge jump on every other forward. Well, me and Ian Fitzgerald played really well. This was the first experience he's had of Laois football. And there you are in the county final. And now you've got a huge head start because first impressions are massive. It's like Hubert Darcy, I was saying to him, yeah, he thought you were a wing forward playing full forward. You know what I mean? The first impression, if you play well in your first ever game with a new manager watching you, and his first impression is that you're an excellent player, it'll take about 4 games for you to change those first impressions back around. But if you play shit in the first game he ever watches you in, it'll take you 4 good ones, and he might never believe you're a good player because he's made up his mind you're useless.
Is that what you found out with Mick O'Dwyer? Took you 4 games, was it?
About 6 months, yeah. No, well, I don't think he never really had a problem with my form. It was more, well, maybe a little bit on my form. It was more my... outside the training, social life kind of was my problem with Mikko.
Yeah, but it's a clean slate, like when there's a new manager there and you're kind of like, right, well, this lad, he mightn't have a clue, like, especially if it's an outside manager like Mikko Dwyer, he won't know too much like Laois football, and he's coming in and he's just going off that first impression, and it's a clean slate for everybody. And sure, like, you're kind of, when you're playing in a game like that and there's a new manager in, you'd kind of nearly have an eye up in the stand. Is he here today now? And like, you're just buzzing to sort of give it a shot, like, and try and, I suppose, make that first impression that you're looking for.
Well, that's it exactly. So Carrigan are out in Antrim. They were going for 3 in a row. This is the last county champions that are out that I could see. Creggan beat them. Creggan always the nearly men, Lee, up in Antrim. I think it's 67 years waiting for a title, but they're always in around the mix.
Yeah, but they were in the final last year against Carrigan, and that was a very close game. This will be a huge win for Creggan. When I say they're local rivals, I mean the two clubs are like right next to each other. And there's so many relatives, you know, back and forth. Like, you're playing against your cousins and brothers-in-laws and things like that. So it's not a friendly rivalry by any means. There's always scraps at some stage. So for them to finally get over the line, you know, because they would have been like you know, the Everton sort of mentality, watching the neighbours get be so successful and loud and cocky about it and stuff. So finally get over there and to get to the final themselves and beating Corrigan on the way, that'll be absolutely huge. Like, and it's good to see a little bit of a change of the landscape on Antrim football, because it's sort of just been Corrigan this last little while.
Well, there's definitely going to be a change anyways, because like we said, Craigan haven't won it in 67 years and they're supposed to be playing St Mary's Ochnagallen. They won a huge epic semi-final, right? And well, they won the semi-final, but it's probably going to have to be replayed because they beat Port Glen O. There are two clubs that I thought I was going to have problems with. I probably messed up Ochnagallen. So it was a draw after normal time. St Mary's Ochnagallen have never been in the final before. And a draw after normal time, the referee played 2 minutes of 10 periods of extra time. So one 10 and then another 10. And it was a draw after that. And instead of going straight to penalties, he played 5 and 5 minutes. So an extra 10 minutes of extra time. Now, I don't believe that's following the rules. So Port Glen O are going to object to this. And poor St Mary's Ochnagallen, who are in their first county title ever, might have to replay that match now because they won it in the second period of extra time rather than it go to penalties. So I don't know, could that replay just be start with the penalty shootout? You know, they've drawn after the second period, or they'll just probably have to replay the game.
Yeah, they've really opened a can of worms with this one, to be fair. I mean, the only thing I can say is, in fairness to Ochnagallen, is that, like, you know, both teams went out and played the game, you know, so whoever lost was obviously going to make that complaint. But even though it wasn't protocol and it wasn't the correct thing to do, they both obviously agreed to it because they went on to the pitch. You know, the players, I'm sure they weren't happy about it. And I mean, both teams in this situation. But it was still a matter of who's the better team in the end and who's got that, who's got the legs to get over the line. And it was Ochnagallen in the end. So, like, they probably do deserve their place in the final, but I can totally understand Port Glen Owen's frustrations, you know, especially when you finish that extra time and it's a draw and you're mentally probably already starting to think penalties and try to get your head around that, because, you know, it's obviously a new thing in Gaelic football itself. But I don't know what Antrim official came up and said that, no, we have to do it this way, or if someone there is just dead against the idea of penalties and refuses to let it get to that stage. I don't know, but they definitely have a case. But I think I would be surprised if they did force the replay.
Port Glen O, we don't know. Like, if Port Glen O came on after the 2 tens and said to the referee, that's it, it's penalties, and then there was a bit of an argument, you know, you might say Port Glen O have a bit of a case here. You know, they were thrown off, this is going against what's supposed to be done. But if Port Glen O came on, told extra 5, they agreed to it, and they lost it fair and square, after an epic game like that, you'd be nearly thinking, geez, just take your beating. The referee made a mistake for both sides. Do you know what I mean? Like, Niall, it depends on, we weren't there, we didn't see it, and I didn't see any quotes from Port Glen O officials saying, it's outrageous, we made the case to the referee, and he, you know, we were about to walk off the field and there was a big drama. You'd say, grand, you know, replay the game. They were thrown off, their, you know, out of their stride. This was clearly a mistake. But if both of them agreed, can you not just accept that result?
Like, that was an absolute epic. And you know, when games come down to, when a game goes to extra time and, like, the score just stays, like, this team, the one team scores, the next team scores, and it's nearly a draw. And more often than not, like, it will go to a penalty shootout. Like, so for a team to win after extra time again, like, for the 5 minutes of extra time again, like, that's just you know, like, that's an epic win. Like, and you've done something kind of, when you were so tight the whole way through, you've done something brilliant to win that game. Like, so what a buzz it would have been for those Ochnagallen boys, and, like, for it to kind of be thrown back at them like this, especially when both teams agreed, like it obviously went ahead for the extra time again. You'd just be sickened for those lads, especially, as you said, it's their first county final too. Like, Jesus.
Yeah, you'd be sick of them. But I think this was brought in. I remember a Clare Limerick league quarter final in the Gaelic grounds, and it went to that extra time and then another one. And in the second 2 fives, the lads could barely walk. And I remember thinking, like, that's actually cruel on players. Do you know what I mean? Just finish the game. Like, I mean, it's too much extra time. Tony Kelly was outstanding, which is no surprise, that day in the Gaelic grounds. And I think Clare beat Limerick. That was the year Limerick went on to win the All-Ireland, I'm pretty sure. But I think they changed it then for that reason. And then I was reading in the Irish News saying that the rule is in for the second period of 2 fives if it's a county final. has to finish on the day or something like that. So there's little bits, ins and outs. I don't know. We'll wait and see what happens. It's being discussed by the CCCC in Antrim. So we'll see what happens on that. In Laois, the big county final that everyone's hoping for was Port Laois against Port Harlington. Port Laois, obviously the big team for a long time in Laois, and Port Harlington are defending champions. Port Harlington would be favourites going into that final. Port Harlington are a very good team. Port Laois destroyed Ballarone yesterday. I went up to that one. Gareth Dillon was excellent in the first half. And Port Laois, who haven't been playing well all year, they were beaten last year in the county quarter final, followed up this year by Cortwood, who are not long up from intermediate, in the first round. Got a reprieve, a backdoor in Laois. It's not knockout, and they needed a last minute goal to beat Ballyfin. Then they beat St. Joseph's and they beat O'Dempsey's, and they put in their best performance against Ballarone team, who were an up and coming team, destroyed them really. Ballarone's manager is Pádraig Clancy, and I met him for a few pints on Friday night, and he was telling me it's a 50-50 game. I hadn't seen much of Ballarone. I haven't had the heart to text them 50-50 since. I might leave it a couple of weeks or whatever. But that sets up that huge final, Port Laois versus Port Harlington, and a two good footballing teams. So I'm looking forward to this one. In Derry, Lee, Slochnaill needed extra time to beat Lavie. And the only thing I want to talk about this, the other semi-final was a one-sided game. It'll be a good final, Slochnaill and Glenn. They hammered the loop. But here's the Lavie manager. Now, you know, like, I mean, so Lavie started the game really well and went ahead. And then Patsy Bradley gets a black card just before half-time, right? Lavie didn't push up. At the start of the second half then, Slochnaill just killed the game, played a bit of keep ball, kind of took the sting out of Lavie. This was 14 men. And then the Lavie manager, Jude Donnelly, said Slochnaill probably killed the time very well at that point. That was just after half time. Maybe in hindsight, we should have pushed out a wee bit sooner. A point or two at that stage of the game was crucial, to be honest. This is unforgivable. So you're a counter-attacking team waiting to try and get Slochnaill to come and, you know, attack you to turn them over. You're ahead. Slochnaill are down to 14 men for 10 minutes, and you decide just to leave Slochnaill have the ball. It's almost like we've been, brought in a time machine back to 2013 or something.
Yeah, well, in Derry football in recent years, it has been sort of defensive. When Marfelt won it in 2019, they definitely a very defensive structure in place. Ballanderry have very much gone down that route in recent years, but... No, it is unforgivable because everyone's been ranting and raving about this Lavie team and how young they are and how fast they are and that they're up and coming, and this will be the year that, you know, they'll finally make that breakthrough. And what better opportunity could you have when you've got players like, they have young Matthew Downey, who captained the Derry Miners to the All-Ireland this year, you know, and he's been fantastic on the, I think he scored 4 frees in that game. A real calm head, like older than he seems. And, you know, when Slochnaill have a man down, you're ahead, you've just got to, you got to go for it, you know, and you can't just limp your way into the final, especially when you haven't been in one in a while. You have to really attack them and take the game by the scruff of the neck. So, like, yeah, they will. They'll rue that decision in the end, because eventually they went down and they needed a goal at the very death. It was Eamon McGill. He got a big dirty toe poke on a loose ball. It sort of spilled in around the box, and that sent it to extra time. But, yeah, in the end, the experience with Slochnaill got them over the line.
But here's the thing with the likes of Lavie, all young, fit, all those kind of things. And Ballarone are the same thing. Ballarone against Port Laois, Ballarone have won 2 of the last 3 minor titles, you know, and they're up and coming. And again, they're young and fit and fast. And this tactic, Ballarone had it, and I'm not sure Lavie had it too. They're a counter-attacking team, and, you know, they're dropping all these players back behind the ball. They're leaving maybe 2 up front. And it's like what I was talking with Hubert Darcy there. Like, teams don't give that 12 behind the ball back. Like, Port Laois are a big, strong team. They worked it over and back and worked it over and back, and they got their scores. Now, if Ballarone did manage to get the ball back off them, they're a smaller team than Port Laois. Port Laois are a big physical team. Port Laois now have everybody bar 2 of their team inside the Ballarone half. Ballarone have everyone bar 2 inside their half. There's about a mix of about 24 players in a small area of the field. So even when Ballarone won it back, they had to work the ball out through their hands. They couldn't kick it to their two men because they're off up the other end of the field. They had to try to work the ball out through their hands, running through Kieran Lillis, Kieran McAvoy, Garrett Dillon, Conor Boyle, big huge Portlaoise players, and all they're doing is slapping it back out of their hands. Like, these kind of tactics are brain dead. This counter-attack football, and at least they've copped on at inter-county level, that this does not work as a tactic for your, you know, as your only tactic in Gaelic football. And I see club teams and they're all doing the same thing. It's brain dead. If you win the ball back, you only can hand pass it. There's no kick pass on. And the other team have most of their players right up in your faces. So you don't get anywhere with it. Your counter-attack does not work. Remember years ago when the ball would be broken down, the other team would all, you know, they'd kind of switch off and the team would run down the field and it'd be this great counter-attack sweeping score. That doesn't happen anymore. You only end up running into a crowd of players to get the ball back off you. Unless you stretch the play. You have to stretch the play. And that means leaving more forwards up the other end of the field, or you've got no attacking game plan outside of running a ball through a big huge pile of bodies. It's so dumb. And club teams, because obviously club take their lead off inter-county and the inter-county is slowly turning the other way, you know, club managers aren't ready to go, I'm ripping up what I've been doing. So a club is going to take a few more years to realise that this is so stupid. It's so stupid that the attacking team has become more sophisticated now and they're not giving you that ball as easy as they used to. So all your 12 men back there is doing nothing outside of messing up your attacking game plan. It's so stupid, lads. It's so infuriating to watch it. But anyways, when I saw that Lavi comment, I couldn't believe it from the manager. Imagine the manager saying, geez, maybe we should have pushed up and tried to get the ball back off. Like, give me a break. To read that bit would infuriate me. So maybe if Lavi want to start improving with their young team, they might start changing that kind of nonsense, because that young, fit counter-attack football is a thing of the past as far as I'm concerned. Last story of the day, lads, is Glenmore beat Thomastown. King Henry, first ever club match to lose as a manager, Niall. Not a great start for his Galway career, is it?
It's a bit of a sickener, I suppose, when he's like just popping out of club GA and having won every championship he played into kind of.
So he won two Kilkenny championships, two Leinster championships, and two All Ireland championships with Ballyhale.
And he was going.
And now his confidence is ruined by not being able to win intermediate Kilkenny championship.
That'd be sickened, won't it?
We got the wrong man.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but like. Thomastown, they'd been thereabouts, like in that intermediate championship. They'd been unlucky. Last year, they lost the final on penalties to Listowney, like who they'd been expected to beat on that day, and they lost to Tullerone the year before. And I suppose with Henry coming in,
it was the secret ingredient.
This is the year now. But Glenmore, like, they've the three Murphys, like Owen Murphy and his younger brother Shane are in the half back line, and they scored something like 4 points from play between them. Alan Murphy with Ger Aylward up front. The few Kilkenny minors, as an Ian Byrne there as well. Like, so they're a brilliant team. And I'd say the most surprising thing is that they haven't been in a intermediate final in Kilkenny, but it shows how competitive the whole grade is. But it's a disappointing way to end for Henry's kind of club management for the moment.
Well, he has the job now anyways. At least it didn't happen before the Galway job. Anyway,
yeah,
Davy Fitz could have got it. Although he didn't set the world alight with 6 Mile Bridge this year anyway. So maybe that would have balanced each other out. The Murphy brothers scored 13 of 19 points. Did you mention that there? Okay, you did. I wasn't listening. So Anthony Cunningham was interviewed anyways about King Henry getting the job. And he was talking about, he was asked, probably not the most objective man in the world to be asked about Galway. And, you know, what can you expect with Galway? And I thought it was funny. Obviously, Anthony Cunningham was ousted by the Galway players and dug his heels in and wanted to stay. And it got very messy. And then eventually had to say that he was leaving. I just had to laugh at his answer. Obviously that happened. There's still some players from that era still around. So Anthony Cunningham was asked what he'd like to see, you know, with Henry coming in. And he says, I want to see more young players coming through. Some of the older players have really given their day. So it's just this little final, there you go, boys. That's the last little, payback for that little feud. Anyways, maybe I'm reading way too much into that. Look, that's all we've time for. We're going to leave it there. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll do a little bit more on Turles Sarsfields. I'm pretty sure the Kildare County Final is next weekend, and we have some good stuff on Naas Newbridge rivalry. So we'll talk to you all on Thursday. Good luck.
no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey is eating, a donkey needs a pallet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, spit. But I burst out laughing watching him.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.